Podcast One presents the Steve Austin Show Classics.
My special guest today is a guy who I've been wanting to talk to for a long-ass time. His name is AJ Styles. He is the phenomenal one. AJ, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me. It took a long time, huh?
It's been a while. Hey, man, I'm working on that rotator cuff. I'm just coming back from a little bit of an injury. You almost yanked my arm out of socket. How are you? Welcome to the show.
Man, I'm better than I deserve, honestly. This is it's been great being here. So I'm just excited to be a part of it all, honestly.
You're excited to be a part of the podcast, excited to be a part of the WWE. How are you feeling? Because I just got finished watching you in this show, Monday Night Raw, live a little bit while ago, cut a hellacious promo out there with John Cena, and then you stomped a mud hole in his ass and walked it dry. Are you starting to get acclimated? Do you really feel at home now? You've been here 6 months. You've knocked some matches out of the park with Roman Reigns, a classic last night with John Cena. How you feeling? How you fitting in?
Well, I got to tell you, when I first got here, I was a little nervous about coming in here. You heard stories about the WWE and the guys that were here, and so I didn't know how, a new guy coming in, how they would respond to it. But, man, they treated me like gold here. I couldn't believe it. In fact, I probably got comfortable way too fast. And so I had to dial it back a little bit. I mean, that's how good this roster is, man. Then made me feel, they did make me feel at home very quickly, man.
But, you know, dude, how long have you been in business? Damn near 18
yes.
years?
Yep.
Okay, this ain't your first rodeo. You come into the big stage now. It took you a long time to get here. And we're going to talk about all that. But as you know, you can never get too comfortable. You get comfortable, you get complacent, you go downhill. You're making your presence felt. You're knocking these matches out of the park. Are you happy with where you are right now?
I mean, how can I not be? And I like being put in that position where I have to work for it. I don't mind working for something. I feel better when I'm working hard to get to a destination. And it's here, you know, to be one of the top guys, to be in the main event. And I like working hard to get there. And truthfully, I know I'm not the biggest guy here, so I have something to prove. So I have to get after it when I get in the ring.
No, I kind of noticed. I thought you maybe operated with a chip on your shoulder.
Well, I wouldn't say it was a chip.
What is it?
It's a guy who's always been told, well, you're not the biggest guy. You know, I'll tell you a story. My oldest son is just, man, he's an athlete. Nothing. All my boys are athletes, but my oldest son is into all these baseball, basketball, and does really well at all of them. I told my dad, I said, Dad, he's great at everything, but he's small. He goes, yeah, that's funny. So are you. You just didn't know it. There it is. You don't have to know how, it's not about how big you are. It's not how big the dog is, how big the fight is in the dog, right?
Right.
Same thing, man.
Dude, if you'd lined all the WWE superstars back up in about 95, 96 when I came in here, I wasn't the biggest, best-looking cat in here either. So I feel like there's a little bit of a parallel kind of running with what you're doing here in today's landscape with what I was doing back in my day. But can I give you a piece of advice before
Please.
We get into a little bit of your history and come up and tell your story?
Please.
Next time you get John Cena down on the mat and get a chance to stomp the snot out of him, lay your shit in just a little bit more because those opportunities are few and far between. You know what I'm saying?
Oh.
Just a little bit of advice. Turn the volume up because you don't want to get lost in the shuffle. Kick the shit out of that guy when you got him down.
I'm guaranteeing there's probably going to be another opportunity because I will take advantage of it and I will take your advice.
And I want to apologize for those 2 four-letter words, but I figure when you pay $9.99 for a network and you get all the quality program that's on this thing, that you get 2 four-letter words from Stone Cold Steve Austin every single month. That's just what I believe, AJ. I got to give the people their money's worth. For those that I offended, my humble apologies. AJ, back to you. I tried to do a lot of research on you. I've seen a lot of your work from all the territories, all the promotions you've been. Holy smokes, you've been around the world. But where did it all start? Where do you come from?
Well, you want the whole story?
I want to know where you was born.
Camp Lejeune, North Carolina.
Here's a story about Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. Was it Army base or Marine base?
Marine base.
That's a Marine base down there. Wrestled down there in the early 90s in that little gymnasium that they have over there. That is the hottest damn building I have ever wrestled in my life. How was life coming up? Was your dad a Marine?
My dad was a Marine. I will say this, although I was born there, I didn't spend You know, I don't even remember being there because, you know, I was about 1 year old. We moved to Gainesville, Georgia.
Yeah.
But once a Marine, always a Marine. I lived with a Marine, and the guy was pretty scary. You know, it just as Marines should be. You know, this a lot of respect for the Marines, you know, mainly because my dad was one.
Your dad was a Marine, but how was he as a dad?
Well, you know, my dad, there's no doubt I knew he loved me. I knew he loved my brothers. There was, I had three other brothers, and I knew that he loved us, but my dad had a drinking problem. You know, he was an alcoholic. When he was drinking, he was a terrible father. He took it too far a little bit sometimes, coming home looking for a fight, and took it out on his kids and sometimes his wife. You know, there was some difficult times, but even though bad stuff like that happened, I still knew that my dad loved me. Really, you know, supported me in every sport I ever did. You know, he was just.
But
you know,
was he a loose cannon? Was this a regular everyday thing?
Or it was.
Like,
it was,
hey man, what's Dad going to be up to today? I hope he ain't drinking.
That's exactly it. Well, I hope Dad doesn't come home drinking, because we knew somebody's going to get tore up, because anything could set him off. You know, when he's drinking, and when I say that, you know, I don't want to put my dad in a bad spot here, but yeah, I want you to tell you that he did go too far when it came to the spankings. You know, he, you know, going off the handle too much. I remember I'm breaking stuff off, you know, just too far. You know, what I said, we got beatings, maybe a little bit. You know, maybe I would say that that's the kind of dad we have, but also, nobody's perfect. And
so being brought up in a childhood like that, in a combustible environment, which was your dad, who was a good man, but when he was on the sauce, not good.
Not good.
Did that have any effect on the way you raise your kids? Because you're a father of four, correct?
Yes, a father of four, and it 100% affected the way that I raised my kids. Now, I have a dad voice, and I got that from my dad. And I can, you know, as soon as I yell at my kids.
Dad voice, because I know what you're talking about.
All right, you know, it'll just say, hey! You know, it's a little bit louder than a hey. Yeah. And they, boom, snap their heads around, and they know what's up. Dad's not playing around anymore. I got that from my dad. But I also, you know, I always say you can either follow in your parents' footsteps or learn from their mistakes.
Right.
And I learned from my parents' mistakes. And, I, you know, there's little things that I got for them that I, you know, learned that was good things. But most, you know, I learned stuff I'm not going to do with them.
But in that environment and coming up as a kid, like, what was your athletic endeavors? Were you into team sports?
I was in everything. Just like, you know, my boys are in everything. I was football, baseball, basketball. When I was in elementary school, we didn't have a football team, which is killed me.
You kidding me?
It killed me, man. It freaking, oh.
A small school? What?
This is ninth grade right here.
Okay.
That's my first year playing football on a team.
Okay.
Now, we played in the backyard.
Now, did you join up in all these sports just because you loved sports?
I loved
sports?
Them. I loved them.
You need to get away from your dad. You need something to take out.
Oh, no. My dad would do anything and everything he can to make sure that I played these sports. He would, you know, buy me whatever I need to play the sports, because he loved it too. I mean, I get it now that I'm a dad watching my own kid play.
Yeah.
I would do anything.
What kind of athlete were you? Because when I watch some of the stuff that you do in the ring these days, it blows my mind. And some of the move sets, some of the stuff that you do inside a squared circle. Highly competitive as a kid. Did you excel at the sports that you played?
Basketball did pretty well in. And I think it's more because, not because I was the best shooter or that. I was just a hustler, man. I got after it. Everything I did was a hustle. From, you know, playing T-ball, you know, for the being sponsored by the Boys Club and Dairy Queen, you know, getting after it, man. I wasn't afraid of the ball. I had two older brothers that were going to throw the ball as hard as they wanted at me, so I caught it. I had no other choice either to get beamed. So a lot of these kids are scared of the baseball,
right.
And I was like, bring it.
Right.
I wanted it. I wanted every bit of, you know, the ball that I could. And you know, being the smaller guy, I just wanted to knock a home run as a kid and never got the opportunity to do that, but I would hustle.
But see, in South Texas, where I grew up, we didn't have any amateur wrestling. I understand you do have an amateur wrestling background.
I do. I started when I finally got to play football, our cornerback coach was also the head wrestling coach. He asked me to come out. I said, all right, I'll give it a shot. A week into it, I said, Coach, I can't do this. This is hard. This is difficult. He said, give me one more week. I said, all right.
Was it the conditioning or was it the...
It was conditioning. Okay. I mean, there's no other conditioning like... You know, collegiate wrestling. I mean, you can't compare it to anything. I think some of the best athletes in the world come from collegiate wrestling. There's
well, it's funny that you say that because I'm good friends with Kurt Angle, and he puts you over as being one of the best workers he's ever been in the squared circle with. And if you go back and look at his training logs of the insanity that he was going through to pursue Olympic gold successfully in 1996, he knows firsthand how tough it is. But he puts you over as being one of the most talented wrestlers, if not the most talented wrestler he's ever got into the squared circle with. But back to the amateur wrestling. You made it through. Did you excel at that as well?
Well, I was. We didn't have a 152. So my freshman year, I started at 152. I remember the first guy I wrestled. He was head, you know, it was like he's headbutting me. He's just locking up. And, yeah. And I'm, coach, he's headbutting me. I don't know what to do. And the guy ended up beating me. Second year, I wrestled that same guy. And now I got a thing or two. I've got some, you know, some mat work under my belt. I ended up getting thrown out of the match because I was calling him every name in the book while I'm sitting there putting his arm behind his back. I met up with him again my junior year in the finals of a tournament. I ended up 15-pointing him and pinning him at the same – meaning I pinned him, but if I let him up, it had been 15 points. I wanted to – that was the kind of guy I was. I wanted to – I wasn't wrestling you to just beat you. I'm going to wrestle you. I wanted to hurt you because you decided to get on the same mat as me, and now you got to pay the price. That was my attitude.
See, and that's one of the things, and just listen, you tell that story, that's one of the things that I love about you, because that's that killer instinct. That's that mean streak. To me, to be successful in sports, you have to have a mean streak. Hey, it's not fun just to, hey, I want to compete. I just want to have fun and be out there with the guys. Hey, piss on that. Dude, I want to win, and I'm going to beat your ass to win. And that was much the same way I took into the squared circle myself. But when I watch you in the ring and I see that mean streak and I watch you lay all your stuff in, it's a contest. It's a sport. And that's one of the things that why I praise your work the way I do. Now, I also know you're somewhat of a religious guy.
I am. I am.
So what kind of words are you telling these guys when you got all these hammerlocks and stuff and you got them twisted in a knot?
Well, listen. Now, just so you know, I really... You know, turn off around
AJ,
when I was
it.
A senior in high school. So I was bringing it, you know, and I was saying some awful things, and it wasn't in wrestling, because in football you got to talk a little smack, and I let them know that I was there, and they these little freshmen coming, I'm telling them I'm going to murder you, little mother. You know, I was laying it on them.
Yeah.
That's the way it was. But you know, as I got into college, you know, I went to a Baptist college as well. Man, I just didn't feel the same way. I didn't feel right about hurting guys that I was in there with. So it's just, you know, I didn't finish college. Let's put it that way.
So what was your take on the business of professional wrestling? A lot of people come from the shoot side of it and they see the pros and not so much. But growing up, did you watch the business to begin with?
I did watch a little bit. Now, I didn't have cable or anything like that, so it was very hard and difficult for us.
Were times hard? I mean, your dad's in the Marines. He's an alcoholic. He can be abusive, but he's a good dad when he's not drinking.
Right.
How was the money supply? Were you guys dirt poor?
We were freaking dirt poor. You got four kids, boys. They eat everything in the house. We lived in a trailer. That's just the way it was. And my parents weren't very good with money. I remember there was a back bedroom, but nobody slept in it because it was too cold or too hot. So my parents slept on the fold-out couch with my little brother, and I slept in the other room with my two older brothers. You know, that was our life that we lived for a long time, you know. But, that's the reason why, you know, when I accomplish something or get something, you know, when I walk up to the mail and get my mail, I look back and go, oh, man. Look at this house. I never thought I'd have something like this. You know, makes me appreciate the little things. Not that a house is little, but you know, everything about where I am right now.
So what was your take on the business of pro wrestling? Because you're in, what, Anderson College?
Well, you know, I'm in Anderson College. And
you drop out?
I did.
Why?
Spring break came along, and I go, I don't even know why I'm here. I didn't like school to begin with. Why did I go to college? Oh, I got a scholarship. Well,
what were we going to study?
Physical education.
Okay, I went as a business major, turned into a PE major. I dropped out with 17 hours. At least you quit sooner than I did. You were smarter than I was. So what was plan B?
I really didn't have one. I knew that I was dating a girl at the time. I knew that this is the one. Somehow I was going to marry this girl. I went home, got a regular job. Me and this girlfriend, you know, we were out. Two guys came up to me and said, you know, to my buddies from high school, jacked up guys, says, hey, man. We're going to go be pro wrestlers. Like, all right. I said, I tell you what, when you find a place, I will go with you.
Right.
They go, okay. They called me maybe 2 or 3 weeks later. And they found a place in Cornelia, Georgia, you know, it's about maybe 20 minutes from my house. an old Mud Creek school gym. Went up there. They gave me, kind of testing out, how I was going to react to a bump.
Right.
I said, I can do this. I can do this all day. I'm going to do this. I don't know why, but immediately thought, I can do this. And you couldn't have told me any different.
So did your amateur wrestling background help you in any way, shape, or fashion? Because I don't really see that in your wrestling style. High flyer, highly athletic.
Well, it did to begin with. Actually, it kind of hindered me. I'm trying to rip guys' heads off, and that's not the way we do things. Learning that, but knowing, what a fireman's carry is and stuff like that, knowing how things are supposed to work and how smooth you can make it, that helped. But that alone can't get you where you need to be. You got to be a jack of all trades.
So did you have to back off that mentality of,
the
win factor? Yeah, I'm doing this to win, because
absolutely.
This is a different dynamic.
You know how it is. You learn as you go what's important and what isn't important. But, I barely got any training. Within a month into my training, I was in the ring.
Let me ask you, the litmus test for me, and people that want to get into the business of pro wrestling, sports entertainment, whatever you want to call it, okay, is a flat back bump. Because a lot of people are allergic to that mat. But you with your contact in football, with your amateur background, the bumps were nothing to you.
No problem.
You're good with that.
Yep.
And so then you started chain wrestling. How did you go about evolving into the style that would become AJ Styles?
Man, I got to tell you this, and as crazy as it sounds, my girlfriend at the time, was a cheerleader in high school. Man, it was an athletic competition where these, it isn't what...
Who's that young buck?
Well, a much cleaner version of what you see now.
No, go ahead.
But competition cheerleading. I don't know if these girls are unbelievable. And sometimes guys do it. Well, I did it with my wife as well. I can throw her up. I can catch her. I can do all that stuff. So that's how I learned how to start doing my flips. And just being with her, we'd go out, and do all that. Oh, man. But I wasn't afraid to do flips. I wasn't afraid to try these things. That's how I got started so quickly. This guy can do a shooting star press. So let's throw him in the ring. Was I ready? Absolutely not. I would never do that to a kid.
All right, let me ask you a question. I believe you made your debut under a mask as Mr. Olympia. Is this true?
Is this true?
I've talked to how many people, and they've started off as Mr. Olympia under a hood or a mask, and to those that don't know what a hood is.
Listen,
explain to me how you become Mr. Olympia.
I would have done anything to get in that ring and wrestle. Right. I don't care
whose idea was it?
Definitely wasn't mine. It was the promoters.
Well, why did they want to put you under a hood?
I don't know, and I didn't care. Just put me in the ring and let me wrestle.
Yeah.
And it was against another guy who was, trained with me, so... We just went out there and done. I'm sure I'd be so embarrassed if I watched it now, but I was so happy to be a part of it all. I was dying to be in that ring and to be in front of people and wrestle.
So you met your wife. She was a cheerleader.
Yes.
Okay, so then what were you doing? You were doing stuff on the sides. You was mowing grass.
Yep, I was delivering bottled water. Great job. And actually, I'm probably going to get in trouble for saying this, but I would, to help pay for my training because I had no money, I'd give them some bottled water, so when I'd change it out for them, that's how I paid for my training, is I delivered them some bottled water, 5-gallon jug.
I ain't going to tell nobody that. Nobody listens to my podcast anyway.
But, it worked
out. How long did it take you to grab a hold of to what the concept is here? Here's what we're trying to accomplish. Let's tell a story. You had the mechanics down probably, I'm imagining, pretty fast.
The mechanics weren't a problem, but I think it takes years to understand that, dude, there's more important things than the wrestling part of the match. There's a story that needs to be told. I don't think I really captured that until Terry Taylor and I started sitting down and talking.
When was this? How many years in the business?
Gosh, it was...
Got to be 5-6.
Yeah, maybe longer than that.
Yeah.
Maybe more like 8.
Yeah, because Terry was instrumental in helping a lot of guys down the road.
Yeah.
And myself as well.
I can't explain how much Terry Taylor helped me. I've got nothing but great things to say about Terry.
Okay, so then he helped you in that regard. But let's talk about your style. Because when I watch you, AJ Styles, no pun intended there, when I watch you, I see someone that I see a lot of different pieces of. Do you consider yourself a high flyer, like a cruiserweight guy,
I would say that I'm a guy who will adapt to whatever the guy that I'm wrestling is.
Right.
I want to be that guy. So you can throw me in there with anybody you want. I will adapt to them. I will do their style or my style, whatever we need to do to make this match great. I'll do it.
And to me, that's one of your strong points, the fact that you can work any style that needs to happen. I kind of modeled myself in my early career very impressional by the nature boy Ric Flair. He's my favorite pro wrestler of all time. So in the beginning, I modeled myself after him. You know, took me getting dropped on my head to change into a brawler, which fueled the height of my career. But if you had to say someone who influenced you ring-wise, whether it be one, two, or three, who would you say influenced you style-wise?
Well, I would say at the beginning I was more, you know, attracted to the athletes, you know, as far as their work. And they're, you know, like, I remember Lance Storm jumping up to the top rope, doing this amazing athlete.
Yeah.
And that, you know, I love that. But as I got into the story with Shawn Michaels and the stuff, the way that he sold things and then just everything he did meant something. And that's what I admired about him. And I really tried to figure out how to be more like him and do what he does. Like, I felt like he was the kind of guy that adapted to everyone he ever wrestled.
Right.
And that's what made him great. And not just that, but it was the little things he did that made his matches great.
Let's go back in one component and talk about your wife real quick. Because you met her, she was a cheerleader. All of a sudden, you get into the business of pro wrestling. You're delivering water. You're delivering some on the slide, paying for the wrestling lessons. That's a secret. Don't tell nobody. Get him on grass. You're doing whatever it takes. So all of a sudden now, you start traveling around the world, I'm guessing, or into different regions and territories. What did your wife think from knowing AJ as she knew you back then, working a regular job, and now, man, you're gone all the time? Because, dude, being a pro in this business is not easy. It's not easy to stay married. So how did she adapt to that?
Well, you know, first of all, my wife's awesome. That's plain and simple. She's a good woman. It was difficult when I started traveling around. We started dating in high school. That's where I met my wife. And so she knew me before I was, an entertainer here. And then so when I got on the road, it was difficult. It was hard being away from her, and she's got nothing to do. I mean, even though she's home, she wants to spend it with her husband. But I'm gone a lot. It's very difficult. When we had our first son, though, now it's not about us. It's about him. It's about the kids, and things got a little bit easier, and my job is to make sure I provide for them. So it's odd that it was the kids that kind of go, okay, let's settle down. It's not all about you. And, man, we just worked it out.
Where were you at that time, promotion-wise? Because ultimately, soon enough, you'd end up in WCW, but you'd already traveled for, you know,
far
and wide.
Yeah, I wrestled a guy named Christopher Daniels, as you know. He is the guy, after WCW went out of business, I was a little depressed. I mean, I had an opportunity here, I thought.
Let's talk about that, because you get into WCW, and then they go out of business. WWE buys WCW, correct?
Yeah, correct.
And you were going to get probably a good run, but I don't know if I've got my facts correctly. You tell me. Did talent relations not see anything in AJ Styles and say, hey, man, we'll catch you down the road?
Apparently not. Johnny Ace was the one that basically gave me my job in WCW and also was the one who told me, they're not picking up your contract. WWE's not picking up your contract. And that's a little bit of a blow. You know,
that's a hell of a blow because you ain't got no job.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, that's someone saying, hey, man, yeah, you can do all this, but we don't think you're all that much.
And you know what? I wasn't. At that time, I didn't need to be there. That wasn't the place for me. If WWE would have picked up my contract from WCW, I would have fizzled out. There's no way I would have made it. I wasn't ready. I didn't spend enough time on the road. I had enough matches. All this was, to me, it's all part of God's plan.
But to me, I mean, sometimes timing is everything. Sometimes it's the only thing.
I'll tell you, WWE didn't pick up my contract. Fine. I'm going to go down to, I think maybe is either the 51st, 52nd anniversary of the NWA. I'm going to go down there. There's some Japanese wrestlers going to be there. I'm going to tear it up down there. I'm going to go work in Japan. That's what's going to happen. And that'll be the end of it. I'll just work in Japan. I'm cool with that. Well, going down there, beating Christopher Daniels for the first time. This guy's a star when it comes to the independents. He's just got it all, man. He's amazing.
Yeah, he's an awesome worker.
Awesome. First time I ever met him, though, him and I just had an unbelievable match, you know, which is unheard of. Two guys getting in the ring first time and just never touched before and just have an amazing match. He is the reason why I started getting booked all over the world. That man right there, one of my best friends to this very day. And because of him, you know, I made a living you know, doing all, you know, wrestling on the pro.
So what year was that? Because at some point, give or take, WWE offered you a developmental deal, but you decided,
I guess that had to be 2001, because that's when WWE went out of business, and it was soon after that I met Christopher Daniels and it started taking off. And then 2002, I do believe that in 2002, WWE, I wrestled a match with Hurricane Helms.
Yeah.
Had a good little match with him. And then I went to the camp. I think it was a week long. Did okay, you know, did pretty good. They gave me a call back. And they said, well, we want you to move to Cincinnati. We're going to put you in developmental. And I appreciate that. And I was very happy to have it. But I said, give me a minute. Let me think about this. Because here's the problem was my wife was in college. And I just, in my heart, I didn't believe it was right to say, you know what, honey, you're going to go live with your parents again when I'm supposed to take care of her. I'm supposed to provide for her. That's my job. So I didn't feel right moving to Cincinnati. So I had to call Johnny and said, thank you for, you know, thinking about me, you know, but I'm going to have to turn it down.
But, and that was all for your wife.
Yeah, absolutely. 100. She told me, she said, again, yeah. She said, go. My wife told me, go.
But again, it just goes back to me. You've worked for every single thing you've gotten and you're taking care of your family. And here you're looking out for your wife. So then did you go to Japan or was that?
Well, it wasn't a couple months. And then TNA.
TNA. Dude, let's talk about TNA. They just call you up and say, hey, man, here's what we're going to offer you. I'm not asking for numbers, but how did they structure their offer with you?
Well, I was wrestling World Wrestling All-Stars, I believe it was. They were doing this tour, and I went down there and wrestled and met Jeff Jarrett.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the one, him and his father were running TNA. Basically struck a deal there in Australia. Didn't think much of it. You know, I thought it's another independent. I'll go do it, make some money while I'm at it. That's how, as far as I know, I was the first guy they ever signed to a deal. So
what were your thoughts on TNA? I mean, because you spent, 12 years there?
11 strong years there. And listen, for 6 months, I didn't care. To me, it was another independent. And I was okay with that because it was a Wednesday night. And I didn't have anything going on anyway. I was able to earn some bucks. As it grew, as people told me that this place is going to go out of business, and it never did, and you go, you know what? We got something here. And I was having unbelievable matches with Low Key and Jerry Lynn. Jerry Lynn, one of my favorites, one of the guys I learned a lot from. And then went on to started doing more stuff and gets bought out by Panda Energy. And then this thing's really starting to go. Now we start moving to Orlando. I mean, it was a slow build, and now it's really taking a turn for something big here.
Okay, you're saying the turn starts coming up here. Pan Energy comes in. That means Dixie Carter is now running the company.
Right.
Your thoughts on Dixie Carter running the company coming off the heels of working with the Jarretts?
Well,
the person who's not necessarily been in the wrestling, sports entertainment industry before, although maybe a big fan and a very smart individual.
Well, when... Even though she bought it from the Jarretts, Jeff was highly, you know, very involved with the storylines and stuff like that. So that was a good thing because you had that wrestling mindset still there. So it was still going well. I mean, it wasn't long after that we got to Orlando, got Samoa Joe in there. I was begging for to get Joe in here because he didn't understand. You know, some people don't see people the way we do.
Yeah.
You know, and I knew Joe was going to tear it up, and him and I did amazing stuff. Joe was just tearing people apart. And it wasn't long after that, here comes Christian. And it wasn't long after that, Kurt Angle came. And now it's amazing. I remember seeing Kurt and going, oh, my God, because nobody knew about it.
Right.
We're just like, this is amazing. So everybody's excited. I remember saying to another one of my best friends, I have three friends and this business that I count on that will pick me up 3 in the morning, no matter how far away. Samoa Joe, Frankie Kazarian, Christopher Daniels. I remember Frankie Kazarian going out on our first pay-per-view, you know, when I was at TNA, and I said, tear it up, man. This is it. You know, we're excited about this. And he went out there, and he did.
Yeah.
It was such a great feeling there that we a bunch of guys who wrestled on independence came together, and we were doing something special.
And that sounds great because, you know, when you dug in, it's almost you against the world, really. But did y'all ever feel that you were really viable competition for WWE, or were you just in it for yourselves and the structure that was TNA, and, hey, let's grow this son of a bitch as much as we can?
That's exactly it, that we wanted. We didn't think at the time we thought we could be competition for the WWE. That was the goal. And then we thought, well, we need to be competition for UFC as well. We need to be competition for everybody. We need to do, you know, what we need to do to bust our tail and get there. That was the ultimate goal.
What were your thoughts then? And you were in the trenches working with all the guys you just mentioned, premier workers. And you got guys like, you know, the Flair, Sting, Nash, Hogan. Angle came in, but you were working with him. But you were never the centerpiece of that company, although you held the belt three different occasions, and many different other belts as well. Did you feel like you were second fiddle to the big names?
Well, to a degree, because I knew that I really believe that Dixie was more of a fan of who she watched on television than rather than the guys that got into the ballgame.
Right.
And so that, I saw that. But at the same time, I knew that you couldn't be at the top all the time. You got to play your part in this role. And here's the truth. I don't care who's at top, because if that top guy is doing well for himself, we're all doing good. And I'm okay with that. I'll work my way back to that spot, but you can't always be in the top spot.
All right, that being said, I'm going to stay on TNA, but here, you are here, right here, now in WWE, to be on top and to stay on top, correct?
Yes.
Okay, I want to ask you one question. That six-sided ring, that looked like a pain in the ass to work in. Do you prefer a six-sided ring or a squared circle?
Well, here's the thing. When we were in the six-sided ring, I thought it made us different. I thought different is good, and I still think that to this day. But when Hogan, he came in, we heard rumors that they were going to change all this stuff. Everybody's coming in. We're going to switch to a squared ring. I said, that's crazy. We wouldn't do that because this is who we are, sure enough. Well, before that happened, I took the belly-to-belly from Kurt off the top rope in the six-sided ring, and I thought to myself, I'm never taking that again. Well, yeah. I wrestled Kurt, and we were in the squared ring, and here he goes to give it to me again. It was like paradise.
Right.
So right then and there, it changed the way I felt about the six-sided ring, because our ring is built different, obviously, from the squared and the six-sides. Six sides is rough.
How did it come to be the phenomenal one, that part of the AJ Styles equation?
Well, I will say this. There was when I was working for NWA Wildside back when I first started, Dan the Dragon Wilson, who was a commentator, called me the phenomenal AJ Styles. Then I had a buddy who said, you'd come up to me for no reason, be like, hey, what's up, phenomenal one? There you have it. And we just kind of ran with it.
You're listening to another classic episode of The Steve Austin Show, only on Podcast One.
Do you own a home or condo? Or perhaps you rent a house or apartment? Sure you do. And Geico knows it can be hard work. Because whether you own or rent, you still have to fill it full of your stuff. Your furniture, the flat screen, and all the boxes of stuff that have been sitting there ever since you moved in, but haven't unpacked. It's hard to find the time, right? But you know what's easy? Bundling policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. That way, you'll rest easy knowing that your home and all your stuff is protected, like the furniture and that flat screen. Plus, getting a quote on homeowner's and renter's insurance is super easy through Geico. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. You know, like going through all those boxes of stuff. Visit geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com.
Okay, describe to me now, here, as we sit in the WWE. Hell, earlier, you just got finished kicking the crap out of John Cena. You had a bust-ass match with him on Sunday at the pay-per-view. You're going to probably follow that up with some more matches with the guy. You're on fire. So tell me, like, when I'm thinking, sitting here, okay, you tell me Stone Cold, I get it. Undertaker, I get it. The Rock, I get it. Hogan, I get it. Phenomenal one. Fill me in. What is a phenomenal one? Who is a phenomenal one?
I think he's the guy that no matter who he's in the ring with, you know you're going to see something special. And it may be something you've never seen before, and the fact that I can pull it off anytime, anywhere, any place. I think that's what makes me phenomenal.
Is, and, Go ahead.
And at the same time, you know, I'm enjoying myself when I'm in there.
No, and here's the thing, and I enjoy how humble you are, but when I hear that confidence, and when I hear you saying you're having fun, man, that's music to my ears, because you have to be confident. Never let them see you sweat, and you're on top of your game. And if you ain't, man, it's like tonight's house. You guys were rocking it out there. And in Las Vegas last night, the people were in. Vegas is a tough town because you never know what you're going to get there. So props to that crowd last night at the pay-per-view. They were on fire. And when you go out there, all the chips are on the line. You're out there with the number one babyface in the company, which is John Cena.
Absolutely.
And that crowd was electric. And, dude, you're calm, cool, and collected, and you're in your element. You're calm. You're not rattled. You're confident because the task at hand is to rock these cats, and that's what you did, and that's what I like about you. Before we get more into the WWE action, all of a sudden this 12-year run and 11-year in TNA comes to an end. The highs and lows, everything that it was, all the bookers coming in. Why leave TNA?
I feel like when you work hard, you should get paid for that.
Damn right.
And I worked hard. I never, you know, got in trouble. I never did anything to embarrass the company. And yet I was taking a pay cut. At least that's what they wanted me to. I didn't think that was right. And I put a bet on myself. I bet myself that I could go to Ring of Honor and then somehow get in the New Japan. And everything worked out. And that bet worked. You know, I believe in myself. And I bet on me. And it worked out.
Good call, because you've got to believe in yourself. And I tell everybody that I pass in that locker room, if you don't believe in yourself, it's like we talked earlier. Man, if you don't believe in yourself, if you don't stick out for yourself, nobody is. So props. Talk about Ring of Honor. Let's talk about New Japan, the transition there. Working in front there in TNA for give or take 11 years in your American stateside stuff before you left for Japan. Talk to me about the transition, working American crowds versus Japanese crowds. Very different culture, very different crowds when you're trying to work in a squared circle.
It is a little bit different because they're not as crazy. Like the Las Vegas crowd was amazing. They're not going to be that way. They're going to sit and they're going to be very quiet. You've wrestled in Japan. It's totally different. But the wrestling isn't. And that's where, you know, I was at home. I was with the top guys there. It's crazy how it sounds, but I don't know if you know the story. But I literally came in right to the top. I didn't wrestle any of the guys.
Give me the
story. To the top. Well,
because that's a Bullet Club story, right?
That's exactly where we're going with this.
Talk to me.
Finn Balor, Prince Devitt, he had made a decision that he was going to go to NXT. He's going to take a chance, bet on himself, which was a great bet. And literally, as I'm coming over to New Japan, we do this. I beat up Okada, show that I got the Bullet Club shirt on. Finn Balor is on his way out. I was there when you give a little speech, say thank you for everything. It was very emotional with Finn. And, being in the locker room saying, you know, to the guys, he'd been there like 8 years.
Yeah.
And then I just kind of was right in there, wrestled Okada, first match, beat him for the IWGP World Heavyweight title.
Just as far as a performance factor in the ring, man, I only went to Japan for three different tours. One time that the longest I was over was 3 weeks, in which myself and Arn Anderson drank a lot of beer to maintain our sanity.
Sounds like Gallows and Anderson.
Yeah. We'll get to those. But when you're over there, it's a whole different mindset, especially when you come American side wrestler and you go over there, because, man, I'm listening to a crowd, as you are here.
Yes.
And that's how you're basing your decisions about where you go. And so all of a sudden you go from here to there and you're working in silence. How long did it take you to grasp onto this and say, okay, here's what it is. It's just a different style. But how did that affect your decision-making process in the ring, on the fly, in a match?
Well, I got to tell you, I've wrestled there before. Mm-hmm. So I knew what to expect. What I didn't expect is how good, you know, Tanahashi, Okada, Shinsuke Nakamura. You know, Shinsuke is over here as well. I didn't know how good they were, man. There, it was amazing. And I remember one specific time where I had Tanahashi in the calf crusher. I'm wrenching it, and the crowd just coming, and so we're feeling it. You know, we're seeing it. And I thought, what's going to happen here? And then you see fans crying in the front row because they were afraid that Tanahashi was going to tap out.
Yeah.
And I right then and there, I go, wow, that's the beauty of telling a great story. That's what it's all about. And it was just unbelievable, the matches I had.
One of the things that I also enjoy about your work style, again, I'm a fan, and it's fun for me, who's been out of the business since 03, to look at a guy and say, man, I'm a fan. And so to watch your matches. If you go to YouTube, I always get people to watch on my podcast, and it's the 25 moves of AJ Styles. And the calf crusher's in there. There's so many, the Styles Clash off the second rope. Well, there's 25. You can look at it on YouTube yourself. Dude, how did you come up with this? Because innovation is the word I want to use. How did you come up with some of the sequences, some of the move sets that you've come up with? Because I've never seen them before. And what I like about your style is you execute with malice and intent to harm. You're very safe, but that's one of the things I like. It's not like a ballet dance, and I'll bring a match up here in a little bit. Talk about all the moves that you create and being the innovator that you are.
First of all, I want to be different than anybody else. When I hit a move, I don't want them to think, oh, Ric Flair or Stone Cold. I want them to go, AJ Styles. So when someone else hits the same move or someone that looks very similar, they're going, that's AJ Styles' move. I want them to think of me and me alone. So that's why every one of my moves is I try to be unique in everything that I do. And sometimes it's you know, every move's, it's been done. But you can put your own twist on it to make it yours. I've seen a forearm before. I've seen Misawa do his forearm from the second, but how do I make it my own? And that goes in, it's just little things like Muda. And he'd do that elbow. It's an elbow.
Right.
That's when I say, okay, when I do my knee, I'm going to move a little bit in the air to make it a little bit different than everybody else's.
And I like that. You brought up Shinsuke Nakamura a while ago. He is the king of strong style. He's down in NXT. Who knows when he'll be called to the main roster. But going back to the king of strong style, it makes me think of you. You lay your stuff in. And so I don't know what the gag was or if it's just straight up shoot. A spinning back fist, you knock the Miz's teeth out of his mouth. When you come in here, you've been here 6 months now, give or take. What did people think? It's like, hey, man, I was known during my comeback to I would have done good in the UFC, according to some of the guys that I work with. I'm ribbing. But yeah, I was a little bit snug. I took care of the business, you know, protected the business. I laid my shit in, okay? Any heat from the boys in the locker room?
None at all.
Really?
None at all. That's the pros that we have here. I didn't see one guy go, God, dude, nope. In fact, they said, bring it. That's it. Miz is a tough dude. He doesn't get enough credit. He's tough, man. I respect that guy. And if I thought that there may be a chance that there was would be some trouble in the way, because I do bring it, I'll make sure they know that it's coming. And so build it up so when it does come, it's not as bad as they thought it was going to be.
Right.
So, but like you, man, I hit me. Bring it. I like that. In fact, the harder you hit me, the more I'm into it. So bring it, man, and I don't mind that. I don't mind that part of it. Now, don't murder me where I can't figure out what to do next, but let's make a sound and make, protect the business, as you say.
What would be some of your favorite moments in your career thus far?
I think a lot of them, as far as those, some of the matches that I had, I mean, I've had so many here lately. I mean, I was in the Royal Rumble.
Talk to me about your response when you have a Rumble, because here was when you made your entrance. Roman Reigns was in the ring. He's the world champion. You just had two world-class matches with the guy in recent months. You come down, and the people light up. Did you expect that?
Not at all. Dude, I was so worried that they wouldn't know who I was.
Right.
I thought it was the perfect place because it was Orlando. I had a chance. So I was hoping for that. I was hoping to come out early. But the way we did it was perfect. And, dude, I could have stood right there for 5 minutes and just sucked that in. I mean, I was just loving it. Couldn't believe it. Try not to act like I wasn't, I could have walked back through the curtain and go, I'm done, dude. That was it. But getting in the ring with Roman, man, it was really cool knowing how they felt about him at the time, and it was a pretty good moment for me.
Why did you decide now was the time to come to the WWE? I mean, it's been 18 years in the making.
Well, there was an opportunity. I got in touch with a friend who got in touch with Triple H, who said he was going to call me. Never did. And I just assumed, hey, listen, I'm 37 years old. They're not going to call you. You know, and that's okay. I'm okay with that. I'm happy with where I'm at. And, you know, maybe 2 weeks later, I finally get that call. Now, during that time, we may have to go back to the TNA because of this. I needed to get back home. I missed my kids. I missed if something happened to them while I was in Japan. I wouldn't know what to do. Not be able to get home really frightened me. So I was like, I need to get back home. TNA, we started talking about it, maybe something. But we were also talking to Ring of Honor, New Japan, who worked together. Maybe do something there too as well. So we're doing some, yapping back and forth, and went and had a conversation with a couple people at TNA to see what we were going to do. And Triple H called. We had a great conversation, 30-minute conversation. First time I ever talked to the guy. I knew that's where the place I needed to be was here. And so, lo and behold, here I am. You know, I had to tell New Japan, which is very difficult, you know, for a company that's so good to you.
Yeah, there's a loyalty there.
You know, to say, I'm really, really sorry, guys. You know, but I got to get home. And their reaction was like, you know, oh, no. I think Carl Anderson was the first one to go up to Ghetto and said, hey, I got to talk to you. And he was like, oh, no. And he goes, and he told him that he was leaving. And he goes, hey, and Gallows and AJ. Right. Oh, no. You know, so it was a big blow. But, man, they were so good to me. And in the way that when I left, they were still good to me.
What is the difference between the way WWE operates versus TNA versus New Japan? Well, you put it Ring of Honor, but that's a smaller group. Talk to me about just operation, standard operating procedures, protocols for the boys.
This is the most professional place I've ever worked. And you may not realize.
You mean that straight up. You ain't just blowing smoke.
Dude, I'm telling you. Hey,
right,
listen.
Now, you're trying to get heat.
They have great catering here.
Okay.
I didn't have it really anywhere else. I mean, this
right.
is, you, like, it's
but straight up, and I tell people, sorry to cut you off, but I mean, I tell people this back when I was in WCW. You know, when you're on that side, I mean, it's war. We're number one. WWE, we're number one. But really, when it comes down to it, WWE is the major leagues, and that's just the way it is.
You can't compare it to anything. There's nothing to compare
so,
to.
So were all of your expectations met? Are you being treated the way you want to be treated? How is your communication process with Vince versus Triple H or whoever you need to talk to express yourself and talk to what P1 AJ Styles wants to talk about and what you see? Are you able to voice your opinion, chip in?
Yeah, absolutely. I know who's in charge. I can go to the source. Where before, I wasn't sure exactly who to go to. So now this is the place. There's one man in charge of everything. So, but I also know that if he's not available, I can go talk to Triple H. You know what? I can talk to, you know, Karana. There's guys that are available that I can talk to and have no problem talking to me about it. That's just... You know, it's not everywhere, obviously.
A lot of people will sit there on the outside and say, oh, man, they're keeping everybody down because this guy and this guy and this guy got all the main spots and no one gets shot. Do you believe that to be the case, or do you believe that they are doing everything they can with AJ Styles?
I believe they're giving me every opportunity to make a name for myself. You give me the opportunity, and I will take it, and I will run with it. That's all I need. Just give me the opportunity.
Damn right.
You know, and they've given me that. You know, listen, I said it already. There's no way that Vince McMahon saw anything special in me at the beginning. But when he told me, he said, listen, let me tell you what I want. I want this pit bull. I said, I know that guy. I was, you know, when I stepped onto the mat, that's exactly who I was. That's exactly who I am. I got something to prove. Give me the opportunity.
You've been all over the world. You're an 18-year veteran. You've seen a lot of it. Done a lot of it. But what was your first WrestleMania experience like? Because, dude, AT&T Stadium, Dallas, Texas, 32,101,000, biggest crowd WWE's ever had, rocking that place. What did you think when you walked out? Because Jerry Jones built a house that just can't be topped. Your feelings when you went out, because you're a confident vet, you know what you're doing. Tell me your feelings.
My knees are shaking. I guarantee you. They're shaking. I mean, the crowd's so huge. Record setting.
Yeah.
My first WrestleMania, you know, not that I said, you know, but I think like to think I was part of it. You know, it doesn't get much better than that. I mean, how can it? I'll tell you the craziest thing, man. I couldn't hear a thing in that ring. I mean, I know they were making sounds, but the fans, I couldn't hear them because all that sound was going up. That was the first time I've really experienced something like that. I thought, does anybody care about this match? Because I there was so little that I heard from the crowd. So it was really hard to play off them as well.
And, dude, I speak from experience because we were there in Toronto. Oh, man, it was – no, it was Ford Field in Detroit. And it was Trump versus McMahon. And I was a special referee. And we're thinking the whole time, me and Vince are looking at each other like, oh, we're not doing so great. The crowd don't care. We can't hear them. Dude, the vocal noise goes up to the ceiling. You don't hear nothing. So it's hard to make a decision.
Right.
You went down that night, shoulders got pinned with Matt 1-2-3. I heard your kids were a little bit upset.
They were a little bit upset, you know, and I was like, guys, trust me. I lost that ring, but Dad won tonight. Believe me. And I got a little snippet, you know, of what was going on, you know, the opportunity the next night. And so, you know, I made sure they were there. But, yeah, they were a little disappointed in Dad losing, but, you know, I made sure they knew that Dad didn't really lose that night because I was at WrestleMania. It was unbelievable.
Question before they give me the go home cue. I've had a lot of time. I've had a lot of fun talking to you, and we've talked in the past. You know, just briefly when we passed by each other in the hallways. The few times I get a chance to come up here and see the guys and do a podcast, you're at home. I'm watching what you're doing now. You came in. You kind of just came in as AJ Styles, phenomenal one. Do you prefer working heel? Do you prefer working baby? Because right now you're on a heel run.
I prefer to work wherever I'm needed.
Okay.
Either way, I'm having fun. Either way, I'm going to make it work. But it's a lot easier to be a heel than it is a babyface. And you know that it's the things you get away with. And sometimes that turn is almost what makes you that good guy again.
What would you say the future holds for the phenomenal one, AJ Styles, here in the WWE?
I would think that the relationship that I have here now and the work ethic that I'm showing now hopefully will provide a job, not, you know, performing, but in the maybe helping someone getting better or something like that somewhere in the office within this company. I hope that, you know, they've seen the work ethic and maybe I can hold a job somewhere in this company.
And you've been around the horn long enough through your years and all the other promotions that you've worked. You've been here now. These are shark infested waters. I've told you that before. So you know what you must do. The communication channels must be open. The positivity on your level must be nothing but straight up positive and be willing to make all the shots. Do you feel good about where you stand here? Do you feel like there's a glass ceiling? Do you feel like there's anybody holding your ass down?
Absolutely not. I don't see how – I don't understand that. How can someone hold you down if you don't let them? I mean, I'm going to go out there, and it's my job to get AJ Styles over. It's my job to make sure people want to see me in that ring. That's my job, and I'll take that because I'll make the best of it. And so I don't feel like you can't be held down if you give them what they want to see.
I've enjoyed seeing you expand your character a little bit with your promos lately. My question is, we've seen you in the ring. What else do you have? Do you have more to offer from a physicality standpoint? Have you only scratched the surface?
Only scratch the surface. There's a lot of stuff that I got in the bag that I can definitely throw out. There's some big stuff that may come out much later that people have wanted to see. And maybe, you know, maybe I can take that and run with that as well. I mean, there's stuff that I've got that, you know, you don't, if you use it all the time, then it's not special. But if you use it every now and then, well, man, it's exciting.
Well, man, I'm looking forward to seeing what the future holds for you here in the WWE as you move forward. It's been a badass 6 months. Loved your run, your matches with Roman Reigns. I loved the match with John Cena last night. I wish you health, safe travels, all the best. Dude, these are shark-infested waters. Only the strong survive. I wish you all the luck. It was a joy talking to you, Matt.
Appreciate
I've been a fan of your work for a long time. So, hey, man, I'm talking to AJ Styles, a phenomenal one.
Thank you for joining us for another classic episode of The Steve Austin Show. Please leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts and tell your friends. For more Steve Austin Show, go to podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
All month long on Pluto TV, stream the biggest Tyler Perry movies free. Watch your favorites like Madea's Witness Protection and Madea's Big Happy Family. Join Tyler Perry as he goes on a couples retreat with Sharon Leal in Why Did I Get Married? Or Idris Elba and Gabrielle Union in the Tyler Perry-directed film Daddy's Little Girls. Plus, Pluto TV has hundreds of channels with thousands more movies and TV shows available on live and on demand. Download the free Pluto TV app on all your favorite devices and start streaming now. Pluto TV. Drop in. Watch free.
What's up, everybody? It's All-Star and World Series champ Nick Swisher here, and I'm stoked to tell you about my new podcast, The Nick Swisher Show, right here on Podcast One. If you know me, you know I've worn a lot of hats in my career, and each one of them has had highs, lows, and a whole lot of learning in between. And that's exactly what I'm bringing to this podcast. You're going to get crazy interviews with athletes from their struggles to their successes and all their unbelievable superstitions along the way. You're going to hear from hometown heroes that are stepping up to the plate and making positive change and influences in their communities. I mean, we've got scientists, coaches, comedians. I'm telling you, whether you're an athlete, a parent, a coach, or just looking for a little energy in your life, then Home Plate is right here. It's old school soul with new school vibes. It's the Nick Swisher Show, coming soon wherever you get your podcasts.
Yo, what's good? It's your boy, Big Brother Jake, a.k.a. Jake Warner.
My government name.
Check it out. I host a show called the Big Brother Jake Podcast, and I've taken my talents to the biggest and baddest platform on the planet. That's right, baby. Podcast One. My show is unique as I talk about everything. Life, sports, entertainment, being a single dad juggling several jobs. I'm a hot mess, but it's damn entertaining. Subscribe and review now on Apple Podcasts and listen on Podcast One or wherever you get your podcasts.